Welcome to STEM Spots, a weekly science review produced in cooperation with the Missouri State University Department of Physics, Astronomy, and Materials Science.
Hi, this is Dave Cornelison for STEM Spots, and you're listening to the web version. With me in the studio is Dr. Wenping Chu and Sylvia Peterson. Wenping is the Cliff and Gale Smart Endowed Professor in the College of Agriculture, and Sylvia Peterson is a research specialist in that same college. Thanks for stopping by, guys.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you, Dave.
So, Wenping, talk a little bit about your broad research interests. I've heard about you many times here. I've been here for 8 years, and I know it's grapes, but beyond that, I don't know exactly. So talk a little bit about your sort of broad research interests.
My broad interest is to study the molecular mechanism of grapevine that they can fight or defend against all kinds of diseases. And we also understand the genetics of grapevine, especially our state grape, Norton,
right,
and also wild grapes in the Ozarks.
Talk a little bit more about that because, you know, I know I've heard since I moved to Missouri, and of course my family's from here, but I was gone for 50 years, but I didn't really understand that grapes are truly important in Missouri. So talk a little bit about that.
There is a history of Ozarks wild grape contribution to the grapevine worldwide.
Okay.
Well, let's stop it.
And so we'll talk a little bit more about that, Sylvia. I mean, does that mean that we have economic reasons to be interested in grapes in this area?
Definitely. So vineyard ownership and grape production goes back to the 1800s in Missouri. We used to be the biggest wine producer in the U.S. right before Prohibition, and great wines, too. One thing Dr. Chu, I think, was referring to also was that at a time in France when phylloxera had attacked the grapevine industry, Missouri was able to provide rootstocks that were resistant to that disease.
Right.
And we have been attributed with saving France's grape industry, but other states also take credit for that,
sure,
because
right,
they sent rootstock as well. So, yes, grape growing in Missouri agriculture has a long and rich history.
Right. Okay. Very good. Now, something that new that's coming on here is you've got a project that's actually fairly long live, a long-term project, but it is an exciting thing you've been working on, Wenping, recently, and it's got something to do with viruses. Talk about that.
Yeah, in 2004, farmers found a severe disease in their vineyards. They caused, since we are working on the grapevine molecular biology and also grapevine genetics, they caused and asked us to visit their vineyards. We went there, and indeed, this severe disease really affects the grape production. And that's 2 acres of grape. And we were kind of shocked by looking at how bad this disease can cause to a vineyard.
Okay, that's interesting. And so, but you went further than that. I mean, so it's a virus, and so that ties right into your own research interest. Do you do viruses a lot?
At that time, nobody knew the causes of this disease.
Okay.
Nobody knew. Nobody have clue what causes this disease. We took over this project to find what causes this disease.
Right.
And through 3 or 4 years of intensive study, finally we found that it is a virus. It's
right,
a very bad virus.
Right.
It's a first DNA virus that ever discovered on a grapevine.
Really? Does that mean there's been no other viruses, or is it specific because you said DNA virus? Is that a specific thing then?
Well, before the discovery of this DNA virus, we all know that grapevine are infected with 60 viruses, more than
okay,
60 viruses.
Wow.
But all of this 60 viruses contains the RNA molecule,
right,
as
RNA,
its genetic makeup.
Right.
After we discover this virus, it's a novel virus that contains the DNA instead
right,
of RNA.
So mention that real quickly. RNA is ribonucleic acid, and DNA is deoxyribonucleic acid. And DNA is what's inside us, yes? I mean, we have RNA also, but DNA is the primary mechanism by which we transfer genetic information. But in these other viruses, they primarily have been RNA up to this time. And to people out there that are listening, that might not sound like a big deal. They don't know what that even means. But you're telling us that this is the first in grapes that people had seen a virus that was like that.
Yeah, it is a DNA. Big deal because it is like a new family of the virus group.
Right.
And more interesting is that this virus actually use the DNA as genetic makeup, but have to convert the DNA to RNA and then RNA back to DNA.
Right.
During its life cycle.
Yeah.
So just like, you know, like HIV is from RNA to DNA to RNA.
Right.
But our virus, this is a grape virus, actually starts with DNA and then RNA and then back to DNA.
Right. And of course, when you say the virus does that, it co-opts the cells of its host to do that in some way, shape or form. Yes.
Oh, yeah. It's very intriguing. The virus just uses its host as its
mother,
it's propagation tool. Ground.
Sure, right. And the name again? The name of the virus?
It's called grapevine wing clearing virus because this virus causes this typical symptoms,
which are.
Which is the wing clearing. If you hold the leaves of the diseased vine against the sunlight, you will see this transparent or translucent wing instead of the green wing.
Right.
This become what we call the vein clearing.
Right, vein clearing. And then how bad, when you say pretty bad, does this mean the virus gets into the plants and what, they're dead in a week? Or does this mean it's a longer term scenario? How bad is it going to impact people if this gets into their plants?
Oh, when this virus infects vines, the vine will not die instantly, will not dead next day.
Sure.
It will live in that vine for several years before it causes these symptoms and also the decline of the vine.
Okay.
The vine start to get shorter and shorter and also decline. Eventually, the vine will die.
And I'm not an expert on grapes, but help me out here. With grapes, unlike a lot of plants where it's like, well, the plant lives its 1 year and then it dies, the grapevines, they want those to stay in the ground and produce for them for years and years and years. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. The normal lifespan of a vineyard is about 30 or even longer.
Right.
But when the vineyard gets infected with this virus, the vineyards can only last 15 years.
Okay.
So see, it's basically, really, this virus infection shortens the lifespan of a vineyard.
Right. Now, Sylvia, it turns out that this sounds like a detective story in some way, shape, or form. So lead us through this long-term project or process to kind of get this all tied together. How does that work?
It was a long process. After Dr. Chu and his team at the time were able to investigate this disease and figure out it was indeed a virus causing these symptoms, and then name the virus grapevine vein clearing virus, in his collaboration with other researchers around the country, it was made clear that this virus was endemic to our region. It was only found here in the Midwest. They have not, still to this day, they haven't found it in California grape-growing regions or in New York grape-growing regions. So our interest next was, where did this virus come from? Why is it here in the Ozarks? So since the grapes are from the family Vitaceae, the plant family, and we have many native Vitaceae here in the Ozarks, we've all seen wild grapes when we take a hike in the woods, we decided to to investigate the wild grapes and see if they also host this virus. And indeed, we found at least 4 species of wild grapes that can host the virus and do in the wild. Upon further reading, we found that there is another large genus of Vitaceae here in Missouri, Ampelopsis. So we began testing those plants in the lab to see if they also could host the virus. And we found they host the grapevine vein clearing virus in high numbers.
And what's the common name for that?
That is heartleaf peppervine, people call it.
Okay.
So it looks a lot like a grapevine. The fruit is different. It can be varied in color and much less of a cluster of fruit. We found that plant contains from 33% up to 50% of the plants that we analyzed, of the Ampelopsis plants from the wild, they do have grapevine vein clearing virus.
So now you've identified there's a virus, you've tracked it out, and these wild plants that are in massive abundance around here have it also. And so now it's there, but somebody plants a vineyard. How does it get to the vineyard? Sylvia.
Well, that was one of the questions that grape growers always asked. Every time we had a presentation discussing grapevine vein clearing virus, and even after we discovered that there are wild plants that are a reservoir of that virus, the question that the grape growers always ask was, what's the vector? What is the vector of this virus? So finally, last year, upon observing the number of grape aphids that are colonizing these wild plants, both Ampelopsis and the Vitis species, in the forests or the woods around here, we've discovered these are called Aphis illinoisensis. So we brought them to the lab and we conducted greenhouse studies, transmission studies, to see if these aphids could acquire the virus from a wild plant and then transmit the virus to a vineyard grape.
Right.
And we discovered, yes, they can.
So what? They chew on the first plant? What exactly happens here?
They have sucking, piercing mouth parts.
Okay.
So a stylet that actually inserts into the intercellular space in the plants. So they suck up the phloem, the juice of the plant, and that contains the virus. The next plant they feed on, when they inject again, they have a little bit of, I guess you could almost consider it backwash into other plant, into the vineyard grape, or whichever plant they land on next. And so then the viral particles are now in that healthy plant.
And in the aphid, there's no response of the aphid system to this virus? I mean, you and I talked, we all talked a little bit about, viruses seem to be able to sometimes go from person to animal or animal to person or something like that. So now this virus is in the aphid for a little while, at least, or maybe forever. Does it affect the aphid or does it just sit there in the aphid?
It's just sitting there. The aphids just behaves as a carrier of the virus.
Right.
When the aphid is feeding on the infected vines or wild grape and just carry the virus from the wild grape to the commercial vineyards.
Right.
But it will not affect the aphid's life.
So I'm just curious and thinking as I would in my own research, do you ever do any studies where you let the virus incubate for a while inside the aphids and then see whether there's any changes in the DNA of the virus?
We haven't done that yet.
We haven't done that exactly. However, we've collected hundreds, thousands of wild aphids, these grape aphids.
Sure.
And now what we're doing is extracting DNA from one single aphid.
Right.
And then trying to detect in that entire DNA from the aphid, whatever is in that sample, to try to detect the grapevine vein clearing virus. So if this is from one tiny aphid, you could probably fit 10 of them on your fingernail.
Right.
So they're small. So we have found that in these wild aphids, we can detect the virus. However, based on previous research, for our type of virus, a DNA badenovirus it's called, aphids that contain the virus, typically it doesn't stay in their system very long and it doesn't move through their entire digestive system. It typically just stays in their mouth parts.
So if it doesn't stay in very long, they need to suck on a wild grape and then go within a day or whatever over to a non-wild grape and do their damage.
That's our hypothesis.
Okay, and so then density, well, that's going to speak to the next point. So then Wenping, one of the things you have is you've discovered and your team has worked on for years. Talk a little bit about your team first, Wenping. So when you put, you got how many, what kind of people are working on this? Is this a big group or, and what sorts of people are working on it with you?
Well, from the beginning of the project, we have over 20 people working on this project. We have several graduate students that are involved in the discovery of this virus, discovery of the aphids as a vector, and also we also assess the resistance of different grape cultivar to this virus. This project gave the graduate students opportunity to learn about life science, about plant science, about plant biotechnology. Currently, we have over 3 students in our lab, graduate students in our lab. And we also train 2 undergraduate students. And right now, our lab has 8 people working on this project.
Good. So now you've got it discovered. You think you know what it is. You still have some more work to do, perhaps. So what will people do about it? So what do you tell people to do about it?
Well, now we found the reservoir of this virus in the wild grapes and its close relatives. What we can tell grape growers is that you can remove those wild plants around your vineyard to reduce the chance of your vines getting infected. Before you establish a new vineyard, you can remove those wild grapes or hard leaf pepper vines, because this is the resources of the virus.
Sure.
That's the first and the easiest thing the grape growers can do. Another thing we can do is to control the pest populations in commercial vineyard just by applying pesticides as a standard vineyard management. The third thing we can do is to breed virus-resistant grape cultivars, but that's a long-term goal. At the same time, we also evaluate the grape cultivars that we grow here in Missouri.
Right.
To evaluate if those grape cultivars are resistant to this virus. We found that 2 major grape cultivars, red grape, Norton and Chambersin, are indeed resistant to this virus. We tell grape growers that you can grow these 2 red grape cultivars without too much concern about this virus, so, because they can defend against this virus.
So which one is the most, it has the worst response? Which grape has the worst response typically?
Oh, that's a very good question, Dave. The worst grape that can be infected by this virus are Chardonnay, Vidor Blanc, and almost all other.
That sounds like wine grapes.
Yes. Those are the major wine grapes we grow here. Norton, Chambersin are the 2 major red grapes. Chardonnay, Vidor Blanc, Villons. These are the major white grape.
So it sounds like if you're talking about the response, changing your grape cultivar for people who want to do the wine production is not an option because they're not going to produce wines that are competitive. Is that right or not? They're not. Those aren't good wine grapes. So how much effort, I'm curious, how much effort would you guys be spending on this idea of resistant strains that are in the Chardonnay family, for example?
Well,
would people hire you to do that?
No.
I know you're not in it for the money. I get that. You're a purist, and that I respect that.
But I'm a pure scientist.
But would you do it for your own edification? How about that?
Well, out of our own interest and curiosity, we not only understand the genetics of the grapevine's defense against the viruses and the pathogens, we also breed the new disease-resistant grape varieties,
sure.
grape cultivars that that will benefit our industry here.
Sure.
So we're not just do the research and the science in the lab. We also try to help our grape growers and the industry here to have a sustainable grape growing in our region for a long term.
Sure. No, I get that. Well, it sounds like quite an interesting project. So just out of curiosity, when you think about this over the lifetime of a research project, is it typical? Because this one sounds like it lasted what? Even so far, 14 years, is that right?
Yes.
So is that, when you talk about one of these projects where you are thinking about things in terms of the genetic variation and disease response in grapes, is it typical that a project sort of has a lifespan of 10 years? Is that something that's true for what you do?
Well, thank you for asking this question. It's really practice my patience. Because grapevine is a perennial woody plant.
Right.
After you plant a vine in the ground, it takes like 3 or 4 years before you can harvest grapes for making wines.
Right.
And when you do the research using grapevine as plants, you have to wait and wait and wait for the grapevine to show the symptoms.
Right, right.
Just like I mentioned, when grapevine is infected by wind clearing virus, we call it GVCV, it takes 1 or 2 years for a mature vine to develop symptoms.
Right.
So for example, we try this insect transmission experiments in the greenhouse.
Right.
We put the grape aphids on the virus in infected vines for 1 or 2 days. And then we transfer the aphids from the virus infected vines, let the aphids to feed on this vine for 1 or 2 days.
Sure.
And then to the healthy or virus-free Chardonnay vine, which is the worst variety to this virus.
Right.
And we have to wait like 3 weeks at least.
To see anything.
To see anything happen on this aphids fed Chardonnay vine.
Right. Okay. So just the mechanisms of growth and exhibition of symptoms in something like a woody plant that grows for years and years and years and years, you basically have to wait around. And so that extends the life of your research project, so then you can ask for money for more years. Is that right? That's
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what we have to request the grant.
Sure.
On a yearly basis.
Yeah.
We have to renew it. We have to request,
sure.
renew. On a yearly cycle.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like a plan.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a plan. It is a good plan.
Yeah. Very nice. So it builds patience, which is good for you, and it's a continual plan. Well, you know, guys, I really appreciate you coming in and talking about this. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Well, thank you for inviting us to have this conversation on STEM Spot.
And once again, this is Dave Cornelison for STEM Spots, signing off.
STEM Spots is available online at ksmu.org.